This is Living the RV Dream, episode 44 for Friday, February 16th, 2018.
I'm riding with my RV, wherever I want to be, 'cause I'm free in my RV.
Well, hello, happy campers, and welcome one more time. I am back. Not only I am back, since last week we didn't have an episode, and I apologize for that. I am back in my, what's it called, in the RV world, my sticks and bricks home here, my non-mobile residence here in Miami, Florida, and this house feels huge. By the way, if it is your first time here, my name is Robert Morales, and we usually travel towing a Winnebago Micro Mini travel trailer, which we've had for 3.5 years and has brought us so much joy. We're still not full-timing, we're weekend warriors, you know, part-timers, although for the past month, I've been on the road, and this has been the longest I have been away from home and away from family. And what I wanted to do basically was have enough material to have enough YouTube videos for a couple of months, and that's what I did. Of course, if you've been following me on social media or here at the podcast, you know more or less what I did for the first half of the trip. Of course, my stunt was to make it to the Tampa RV show and then drive all the way to the Quartzsite RV show before that show ended. And I did that, and I met so many awesome people over there. And it was a great experience overall. I continued south to Yuma, and then west through Slab City and the Salton Sea, and even into California. I even drove to the west coast just to take a picture, you know, with the Pacific Ocean, and make it a coast-to-coast trip, which had been a dream of mine, really. Then I drove from there. I stayed at Lake Cahuilla State Park, which is near... what's the name of this place? La Quinta, California. And then, anyways, then I drove east to Phoenix. And the last time we spoke, the last time I did the podcast, I was in Phoenix, Arizona. And let me tell you what has transpired since then, because a lot has happened. Of course, as you probably know, I got a flat tire in California. And once I arrived in Phoenix, I decided to, the first day, you know, take care of business. So I got a new tire for the trailer. I did some maintenance on my old Kia Sorento, my tow vehicle. It's a 2004 Kia Sorento, 14 years old, still going strong, really, 135,000 miles and counting. And, you know, I did all that. I bought groceries. The first day in Phoenix, I took care of my bare necessities. And Phoenix is a cool place, actually. That whole area, Tucson and Phoenix, when you think of the desert, of the Arizona desert, you know, that quintessential image with the tall saguaro cactus, that's Phoenix. You know, in Florida, we plant palm trees, you know, in the median, you know, in the main avenues. Over there, they plant saguaro cacti. And it is omnipresent everywhere in the city. And in the beginning, I was like, whenever I saw one, I would whip out the video camera and start taking video of the saguaro cacti. And towards the end of my stay in Phoenix, I was like, oh yeah, another saguaro, you know, they're all over the place, really. And so actually, while in Phoenix, I stayed east of Phoenix. I stayed in Apache Junction, and which I actually liked. Don't tell anybody, but I kind of liked it better than Phoenix. It's a little more laid back. And Mesa is also a very cool town. Very nice people everywhere. Everywhere I met very cool people. Well, in Apache Junction, just east of town, there's this ghost town called Goldfield. And, you know, it is a town, you know, an old town from the times of the gold rush, I suppose. But, you know, they've kind of rebuilt it, and It is actually very nice. They have a saloon with the bartender in the saloon. That guy is nuts. It's one of these colorful characters, and he's talking politics, and he's totally politically incorrect. And, you know, it is what it is. That was a kind of fun to see that guy is, that was really cool. And it is a really cool saloon with a lot of memorabilia from all kinds of places and time periods. And there's also the brothel and the Bordello, I think it is called. And then they give you a tour, and supposedly it's haunted, and the lady that gave me the tour says that she sees ghosts at night and all that kind of stuff. That she says that she even bought a camera with night vision to see if she can take, you know, pictures of the ghosts at night. And she told me the whole story of what happened there. And I took video of the whole tour, so that'll be going up in my YouTube channel at some point. But in a sense, this town of Goldfield, and some people are going to not hate me for that, but you may disagree, it felt a lot more authentic than Tombstone, which is like the quintessential Western Old West town. And it is perhaps the saguaro cacti all over the place. It is perhaps the Superstition Mountains right behind it. You know, it's a lot more picturesque. It's a lot more of that Old West, not quintessential, it's not the word, that a stereotypical Old West that you see in pictures and all that. And there's also a place right before it. What is it called? It's the Superstition Mountain and Lost Dutchman Museum. And it's like a replica of an old Western town. They also have the Elvis Presley Memorial Chapel, which I believe is... someone told me that that's where Elvis Presley got married. I'm not sure about the story. But anyways, Elvis Presley did shoot a movie there. The movie is called Charro. And yeah, they have a bunch of memorabilia. And also in the back of the museum, they have this beautiful miniature train. And each of the stations represents a different town, I guess. One of them is an old Western town. The other one is a silver mine. And I fully recommend this place. I did not go into the actual museum, but I did see the outside. And it's very nice. Very cool. There's also Lost Dutchman State Park. I didn't go either, but just the view of the Superstition Mountains is, just go there for that view on the Goldfield town. And if you don't want to spend any more money, that's free. In Goldfield, I did take the train. I don't think it's worth it. It was like $15, and it's just like a 20-minute ride around the town. Tell you a little bit of the history, but for $5, I think it was the Bordello tour, totally worth it. You should do it. And in my case, I was the only one, so I got like a private tour of the place. Very cool. What else? The neighborhood around there. I just drove around. It would be really, really great to own a property there, to own a house. All these large houses with this view. On one side, a view of the Superstition Mountains, and on the other side, a view of the whole Apache Junction area. Very, very cool. By the way, on the next day, I did go to the Phoenix proper, and I wanted to just check out downtown because it looked cool from the expressway, from I-10. And maybe it's because it's supposed to be a very vibrant downtown, but I went on a Saturday, and there wasn't a whole lot going on. Most of the businesses were closed. A lot of homeless people on the street. So, if I can give you one tip, do not go on a weekend. It's pretty much dead. There was some areas, you know, around the Starbucks that was open, that there was a bunch of people, you know, near some of the gentrified areas, you know, where there are some condominiums and stuff. But otherwise, it was very, very much dead. I also, in downtown, I also went to see the Capitol building. And the Capitol building is nice. They have a museum. It's not like the best museum in the world, but they kind of give you a little bit of the history of Arizona. And it's all right. It's free. But in front of the Capitol building, there's the Wesley Bowling Memorial Park. And if there was a war in our nation or any significant event, they have a memorial for it. There's like 10 memorials in the whole park, and of course a memorial to the USS Arizona, which was sunk in Pearl Harbor, and a very pleasant park. Then from there, I went to Scottsdale because everybody was I've heard that Scottsdale is the nice part of town. Also Tempe. I didn't go to Tempe, but I went to Scottsdale, and really, yeah, it's nice, but it's just like if you come to Miami, go to Coral Gables, and yeah, I saw it's this big shopping mall with you know, high end shops and restaurants, and yeah, it's very nice, but. I don't know. It wasn't really, it wasn't really my beat all that much. But yeah, if you want to go to a nice restaurant, and they do have like nice wine bars and stuff like that, and Spanish restaurants, and yeah, it's supposed to be very cool. It was probably me. That particular day, I wasn't really in the mood. I was tired. I was a little nostalgic, homesick, and I was like, not in the mood. I just toured, and I took very nice video of the area, but. You'll see it. You'll see that video in about 2 to 3 weeks. From there, on the next day, I wanted to see Sedona. So I took, what's the name of the interstate? Because there are two ways to go to Sedona, or two or three ways. But I basically took, and I'm looking here in my map as I talk to you. And that is not going to work, is it? Yeah, US Interstate 17. And at the beginning it's fine, you know, it's a regular interstate, but all of a sudden you start hitting the mountains, and I'm towing, and my intention is to boondock for a couple of days. So I have my freshwater tank filled to the brim, and you know, my trailer is really, really heavy, and I'm tackling these 7% grades, and it's not like half a mile or 1 mile. No, it's like 10 miles at 7% grade going up. And I'm sorry for the people behind me, but my speed limit was 35 to 40 miles an hour. And that's what I've learned, really. Even though my tow vehicle is a little underpowered for my trailer, if I go 30 miles an hour, I can go up any hill I want. The only thing, I won't be able to maintain any high speeds. So I did that, and that was really cool. And in retrospect, a lot of people recommended I-17 instead of the other route, which is the 89A. And the problem with 89A, besides the steep grades, is a very windy road, and there are some pretty narrow switchbacks. So if you have a long rig, that could be a problem. I wouldn't have had any problem towing a Minitini, the trailer, on that route. And now in retrospect, I should have probably taken the 89A because I can go slow. In fact, the speed limit is 30 miles an hour. So if I wanted to tackle some steep hills, that would have been better. But anyways, to make a long story short, the idea was to see Sedona. So I took... Interstate 17 North and almost to Flagstaff, and right before Flagstaff I took 89A South, and I stayed at a BLM land on the Coconino National Forest, and it was a little bit rough on my tow vehicle and the trailer, because it was a little bit muddy still. I didn't realize that it had been snowing some days before, and that the snow doesn't quite melt as quickly. You know, I'm from South Florida. I don't know anything about cold weather or snow. So I figure if the temperature goes up during the day to 50 degrees, the snow will melt, and apparently some of it doesn't. So the ground was a little wet, and I did slip a little bit a couple of times as I was driving to my campsite here in this forest, in the Coconino National Forest. And the campsite wasn't all that level. It was moondocking, but it was beautiful. It was a beautiful sight on the forest. If you follow me on Instagram, you've seen that picture. And it was very nice. And from there, it was about a 30-minute drive south to Sedona. So that's what I did. I wanted to see Sedona. And on the first day, I arrived probably around... I want to say 3 or 4 p.m. I mean, a couple of hours before the sunset. So what I did immediately, I unhitched as soon as I was able to park and found a safe, you know, campsite. The campsites are even numbered, so it's not like totally dispersed. It's like they're numbered and you park on your assigned site there in the forest. It's a, you enter through a forest road. Anyway, I went down to Sedona, and the first thing I did was go to the Chapel of the Holy Cross, and that's that church that is like kind of you know, inside the rock, and it's beautiful. Sedona, everything, all the sandstone formations in that area are very much reminiscent of you know, other areas like Monument Valley, or you know what I mean, the Wild West type of rock formations. And I did see the chapel, the cathedral. No, this is the Chapel of the Holy Cross. And I also went to this other spot called Lover's Knoll, from where you get a pretty nice view of the area. And I do believe you can use it during the day. I don't think they allow overnight camping, but you can camp during the day, and it's very beautiful. The next day, what I did, I wanted to climb one of the many trails, and I decided to go for the hardest one, because why not? I've never done this kind of thing, but I wanted to do it, and I decided to tackle Cathedral Rock. And this is a pretty strenuous hike. At some parts of the hike, you really have to go on your hands and knees. And in one of those instances, it was either me or my camera, and I chose me, and my camera failed. It didn't fall like a big, you know, drop. I actually caught it right as it was about to hit another rock, but I broke my camera. I broke my good 4K camera. So, that was kind of sad, but at least I made it out okay. It was very strenuous. I didn't make it all the way to the top, but I made it almost all the way to the top. Beautiful views from that hike and Cathedral Rock. And Cathedral Rock is one of the most iconic rock formations there in Sedona. And I also took another hike to one of these, you know, they have these energy vortices. Well, I didn't feel any energy, but I was also kind of upset about my camera being dying a slow death at that moment. So maybe I was being negative, and that's why I didn't feel the energy vortex around the river. But anyways, that was Sedona. It has a very picturesque, very touristy downtown. Everything is kind of expensive. I had a very nice lunch. It was a cowboy's place. I had a barbecue platter, very good. And it's a very picturesque, touristy downtown. I fully recommend you visit if you are in the area. And from there, I decided to drive up to Flagstaff. And I did want, at some point in my planning of this trip, I wanted to visit a lot of Flagstaff and see the Lowell Observatory. And there's a couple of mountains that you can climb, and different parks and stuff. But at this point, I was starting to get the itch to go back home. You know, I was starting to miss the family and all that. And it had been already... had been already more than like 3 weeks on the road. So I decided in Flagstaff, what I decided to do was I was going to boondock somewhere, like at the Walmart. But I'm going on I-15, I see to the right-hand side this RV park. And I said, let me call these people later today, and maybe I'll stay there, because actually it was I-40, I believe, not I-15. And that was at the Black Bart's RV park. It was pretty cool. It was like 40 bucks a night or something like that. And I said, yeah, sure, why not? And the reason I also stopped in Flagstaff is because I wanted to go to Best Buy and buy me at least a relatively inexpensive camera, so I could continue making videos of this trip, right? I mean, one of the main reasons for this trip was to have enough material to make a lot of YouTube videos grow my YouTube channel and my audience and bring you guys a lot of new adventures on YouTube, of course. So I went to Best Buy, bought this relatively cheap Canon Vixia that wasn't really up to the task, but at the moment it was good enough to continue the rest of the trip, which was I still had a lot of stuff to cover here. By the way, in Flagstaff, I just took a stroll around downtown. You know, there's the Hotel Monte Vista, and it's one of these like old downtowns, and not a whole lot going on. And I did go to the Lowell Observatory, which is the observatory where they actually discovered the planet that is no longer a planet, Pluto. But I arrived kind of late. It was almost sunset time. And it was a little expensive for where it was. It seemed more geared toward those children, you know, like these are the planets, these are the orbits, and this and that. It didn't. For $15, that was the cost of admission. I didn't feel it was worth it. It probably was, but at the time I was also tired. At this point in the trip, you know, when you are not used to this long-term traveling, you know, you get tired. Anyway, the next day I wanted to tackle a section of Route 66, and that's what I did. As I left Flagstaff, I took historic Route 66, which in this area, by the way, it doesn't really exist. It's I-40. And I'll tell you about a big mistake that I made in a little bit. But anyway, the first place that I visited was Walnut Canyon. And I don't know if I told you, but in California, I had purchased this America the Beautiful annual pass for the national parks. And all the really all the national park properties, like national monuments and all these places, are included. So I didn't have to pay admission. So Walnut Canyon is pretty nice. There's like a 1.5 loop trail in which you do go down a stairs, and then you have to go up a stairs. So you have to be a little bit in shape to do it, but it's very nice. And you have all these cliff dwellings, you know, from these ancestral people that they used to call them the Sinagua people. And Sinagua comes from Spanish without water, and that's and I do believe they're ancestral Pueblo people, you know, like and because at some point in the about 500-700 years ago, they all left, they abandoned these structures, and we saw up close and personal a lot of these old cliff dwellings. That was very cool. Then I went to this other place called Twin Arrows. And Twin Arrows, what they have is the ruins of an old gas station and a trading post. Although the gas station pumps, they didn't look all that old. So I suppose that it went out of business probably in the late 80s, 90s. You know, it's like a digital display. So it didn't really go out of business all that long ago. But they have two arrows, you know, stuck on the ground and the ruins of this place. It was cool to see that right next door to it, well, not next door, but like half a mile away, they have the brand new, at least it looked brand new, Twin Arrows casino, which is a Navajo casino, and they do offer overnight parking, and that was one of the places where I was originally intending to overnight on this trip. And and what I did, I had breakfast. I had a Navajo breakfast, which was like corned beef with eggs. You know, it wasn't all that great, but it was all right, I guess. And then from there, what did I do? I went to the Two Guns town, which is another ghost town. And this used to be like a resort town back in the, until the 50s and 60s. And they had like, I do believe they had like a spa and something called the Apache Death Cave. And nowadays it's all ruins. It's really creepy to see. And from there, I had this great idea. You know, I saw on the map this route almost parallel to I-40 that says Old Route 66. And I was trying to save data, so I didn't have it on satellite. Had I had my map on satellite, I would have seen that it was not much more than a dirt road. So I said, oh, it's a road. It's the old Route 66. Let's take it. And at the beginning, it was a well-maintained dirt road, kind of. But then it started to get progressively worse and all these potholes. And eventually, it was like I was going, you know, cross-country, you know, like off-roading almost. And there was no way really to turn back because I had chain-link fences on both sides and it didn't seem feasible to make a U-turn. I tried to make a U-turn. I tried to back up. That didn't work out so well. You know, it was really, really bumpy. But to make a long story short, and you'll see it on the video eventually when I post this, I was able to make some sort of U-turn. I almost jackknifed the trailer. It was one of the scariest moments of the whole trip. You know, I backed the trailer into one of the chain link fences until I kind of hit it, and then I turned left and I did like three or four turns until I was able to kind of make a U-turn and return back to safety. But in this area, Route 66 doesn't really exist. Do not attempt to take the old Route 66 because you could be in trouble. Anyways, the next point of interest that I visited was the Meteor Crater. And this is a crater, which was carved by a meteor many, many years ago. It was like $18 to enter, and the America the Beautiful Pass wasn't good. For this attraction, and no drones, big sign, no drones, so I couldn't fly the drone anywhere around here. In fact, on my return trip, I think I flew the drone once or twice, no more than that. And it was nice to see. It's a huge crater, and you have two or three viewing platforms, but it's not a bucket list destination or anything like that. If you're in the area, if you're interested in craters, yeah, sure, go for it. It's like you have to drive like 10 miles south of I-40 to see it. And it's fine, it's cool. And a few miles, I'm going east, by the way, on I-40 or old Route 66. There's this another ruin of a business of yesteryear called Meteor City Trading Post. And there's this structure that is like a dome structure and several teepees. And apparently this was another attraction back in the day, but nowadays in ruins. A lot of it is in ruins, and it's kind of in some ways sad to see, but very interesting to see how all these places have gone out of business and nobody has bothered to restore them or demolish them. You know, they're just sitting there, like, it's a very common thing in this area. Anyway, after Meteor City Trading Post, the next town is Winslow, Arizona, and this town was probably virtually unknown until the Eagles wrote that song, Take It Easy. And, you know, they mentioned standing on a corner in Winslow, Arizona, and the flatbed truck. Anyways, they are milking that song for all it is worth in that corner. They have a store, you know, selling souvenirs and playing Eagles music in a loop. And at the corner, they have a statue of the Eagles and the big sign that says Winslow, Arizona. And they have a 1950s, red flatbed truck, and but it's very Americana, very picturesque in that sense. Anyways, at this point, I realized that if I didn't continue going nonstop, I would never make it to Albuquerque, which was the place. And another mistake that I always make, but sometimes it is necessary to make reservations because You know, it is winter in Arizona and all these places, and a lot of snowbirds, you know, so sometimes a lot of these places are booked. And I had made a reservation in Albuquerque, and well, I had to make it, right? So I said, you know what? And even then I made it to Albuquerque like late at night. So I missed a lot of other turnouts that said historic Route 66 here and there. Yeah, I missed a lot of those. Actually, the last place that I visited before was another town mentioned in the Nat King Cole song, Gallup, New Mexico. You know, as you enter New Mexico, as you're approaching New Mexico, the landscape becomes increasingly beautiful with all these mesas and buttes and the sandstone formations, especially right there by the New Mexico Welcome Center. And in Gallup, I filled up the tank and it was almost sunset, and I saw what's the name of that famous hotel in Gallup that is you know, it's a El Rancho Hotel. It's a Route 66 landmark. And from there, it was nonstop all the way to Albuquerque. Okay, I arrived in Albuquerque around 8 p.m. or something like that. It was already nighttime, and I did my late check-in. And I stayed a little bit north of Albuquerque at this town called Bernalillo, which was a KOA, pretty nice KOA. It had a brewery adjacent to it, and they had like an entrance to the brewery where you could have a beer or have dinner. But anyways, on my first, I reserved 3 nights, so I would have 2 whole days to myself. So in the first day, I decided to visit Santa Fe, which is the capital of New Mexico. And I arrived relatively early. My first mistake here, I visited the Loretto's Chapel, which is a pretty important church here. And it has this spirals staircase, which defies the laws of engineering. You know, it doesn't have like a pole in the middle, and it's just there like hanging in the air. Very cool. I also visited the Cathedral of St. Francis Assisi. Very, very nice cathedral. And in general, the whole old town, you know, they had the central plaza and all these buildings, you know, kind of imitating that Pueblo construction. You know, it's like, I don't know exactly what it's called. This is these square buildings where you don't really see a separation between the roof and the walls. I'm pretty sure you know exactly what I'm talking about. Anyways, I think my big mistake was to arrive too early, because everything in the town was kind of dead. There was even this neighborhood, which is supposed to be very artsy, very, you know, with all these art galleries and a lot of ambiance, and it was no one on the streets. It's the Canyon Road, I believe. So I also passed by the state capital, of course, and my big mistake. I went in the morning to Santa Fe, and then I wanted to go in the afternoon to the Taos Pueblo. And as I was leaving Albuquerque, you know, a little bit after 12, around 1 p.m., that's when it's starting to go alive, and they had, and now at this time they had mariachis in the main plaza, and before that I actually ate at this restaurant. There were several places where I wanted to eat, but this is the one that actually I decided in the end. It's called the Shed Creative Cooking, and the hottest meal I have ever had in my life. I had tears coming in my eyes because it was that spicy. It was, I decided to have this carne adobada, which was, you know, like pork chunks with all this red chili sauce. Oh, you know, I wanted to have typical New Mexican food, and I think that this was the epitome of that. Anyway, in the afternoon, I wanted to go to Taos Pueblo, but then, you know, after you eat, you start getting tired, and it was like an hour and a half drive, and I said, you know what, let me go to this other place that I also had in my map, which was the this cone-shaped mountains. What is it called? The Tent Rocks. And, you know, it was this road through the mountains. And at some point, I come to a checkpoint and I'm like, I'm really far from the border here. Why do they have like a checkpoint? And it was at this town called Los Alamos. And at the time, I'm like oblivious. And it turns Los Alamos is where they developed the atomic bomb. And they still have laboratories there. And I'm sure they're still researching some nuclear stuff there. So they did ask me for my driver's license as I was going down this road. But nothing else. And then I went into this road into the mountains. And it was these winding roads. And there was snow on the side of the road. And even the road at some points was kind of icy. And I was getting a little nervous. And then when I'm like 2 miles away from these tent rocks, the road is closed. I guess it is one of these seasonal roads that they close in the winter. And there was a lot of snow at this high altitude. This was like 8,000 feet above sea level. So that was an epic fail that day. But anyways, the next day I decided to stay in Albuquerque. And a couple of years ago, I was a very big fan of the TV series Breaking Bad. So I decided in the morning, early in the morning, I decided not to make the same mistake I did in Santa Fe. And I almost did, because I went early in the morning to the old Albuquerque area, which is the old downtown, and everything was closed. And the Welcome Center was open. And this very nice old lady, she was open even before. They were supposed to open at 10, and it was like 8:30, and it was already open. And she told me all the places where I should go and all that, which kind of coincided with the research I had already done. But anyway, to make a long story short, I went to the main four of the main locations of Breaking Bad. You know, I went to where the Los Pollos Hermanos restaurant was located, which is nowadays a burrito and burger shop called, it's a chain. They have a bunch of them in Albuquerque called Twisters. And I also went to Walter White's house, which nowadays the new owners, they had to put up a fence because I guess the fans were trespassing, taking pictures and all that. And it's like, you know, they even had a sign, please do not disturb, take pictures from across the street. And if these people were smart, I think that I would make the house into a museum, you know, decorated like in Breaking Bad. And, you know, I mean, maybe they would have to pay the owners of the intellectual property of Breaking Bad some kind of fee. But I think they would make a killing if they would make a museum out of the Breaking Bad house. Anyways, I went to Walter White's house, and then I passed by the famous car wash that they bought with the drug money in the TV series. And then I even passed by the house of Walter White's brother-in-law, Skyler's brother, which is a very nice house in the hills, very, very nice neighborhood over there. And then from there, I went back to downtown. Actually, I went back to downtown through, I think it's called Central Avenue, which is part of historic Route 66. And it's a little bit of under construction because they've been making a light rail system going through this street. It's going to be great when they finish it. And the Nob Hill area is also around there, which is supposed to be another famous part of town. I didn't see much of it, but I did go to the old downtown, and I had an early lunch around 11 a.m. At this place called the Church Street Cafe, and I had like this New Mexican platter, which had a tamale, and they had an enchilada. And it had a chile relleno, and it was the highlight of the whole trip. This meal was absolutely fantastic. I had it with what they call in New Mexico, you know, green and red chilies. You know, the it's called Christmas when you order both. I found out that the red are the really spicy ones, and the green are a little milder. But there you go, live to learn. It was very nice, and I had also a local IPA, which the name escapes me right now, but I have it on video, so when you see the video, you'll see it. And from there, I went to another a place that I had been really looking forward to visiting, which is the National Museum of Nuclear Science and History. And I believe it was $12. And they have a lot of displays, you know, about the nuclear, the history of nuclear energy. And then they have the artifacts, you know, they have the Fat Boy, is it called? The original nuclear weapon that was dropped in Hiroshima, and then the one in Nagasaki. And outside, they have a bunch of missiles and planes, and I have all the details on video. So eventually, I'm gonna show you all that. One of the volunteers there, a docent, he followed me around and told me about everything in the outside, you know, all the planes, and he explained the history of all the missiles it was a lot to absorb in just a couple of hours. And from there, I learned my lesson not to try to do too many things, and I decided to do one of the quintessential things that you do in Albuquerque, and that's the Sandia Peak Tramway. And I'm glad I did it when I did it, because later during the day, it became really, really crowded to go up. And I'm glad that I got my hoodie, my jacket, to go up the hill, because the top is, what is it, 9,000 feet above sea level? It's like 20 degrees cooler at the top of the Sandia Peak than the bottom. And it's a very cool tramway, you know, it's like a cable car, you know, it's a tramway, you know, like a funicular. And it's not on a straight line. Eventually you go up the hill, and then you go, the car disappears from the view, you know, as it goes higher and higher into the mountain. And luckily enough, up there, the Wi-Fi was great, so I managed to make a live video on YouTube. So some of you guys probably already saw my video from the top of Sandia Peak. Very nice views of Albuquerque. They say that the best time is the sunset, but I didn't want to wait that long. Besides, it would have been too crowded to go down. So I went down a little before sunset, and that was that. Yeah, I had a pretty good time in Albuquerque. On the next day, I had to make a change of plans, because I was monitoring the weather, because I wanted to continue on Route 66 down to Amarillo, Texas, and even continue into Oklahoma, and then eventually, work my way east and south after Oklahoma through Memphis and eventually Atlanta. But there was a pretty bad winter storm coming, and I'm not used to winter driving, and I don't know really what my limits are as far as cold weather with my trailer. So I decided, you know what, let's play it safe, and I changed plans and decided to go south down to El Paso, and then take I-10 east, you know, come back to Florida the same way I left. But on the way, I decided to visit White Sands National Monument, which is another place where I was able to pay the entrance with my America the Beautiful annual pass. And it's one of these places that you might as well think you are in the Sahara. It's all these white sand dunes, and you can slide down the dunes. I didn't do that. But it is a surreal place. Very, very beautiful. And there's a couple of trails that you can take. And yeah, it is very nice. Then I went down to El Paso, and somebody a couple of weeks earlier, the first time I went through El Paso, had contacted me and offered me to, you know, to boondock at his driveway, and he was gonna show me some of the local cuisine. And for the life of me, I couldn't find that email. So if you are listening, I'm so sorry I went back to El Paso and I didn't contact you, because to be honest, I lost that email. It's one of those things that I searched everywhere and couldn't find it. Technology sometimes fails us. I don't know if it was an email or a Facebook chat, or I don't know. Anyways, a lot of people, including this person, had recommended a Cattleman's Steakhouse, which is just east of El Paso. So I said, you know what? Let's go to Cattleman's. Luckily, they had a RV parking. They have a huge parking lot. So there was an area where they allowed me to park, and actually the place was a little fancier than I expected. So I changed. I put my long sleeve button down shirt, and went there. Yeah, it was a carnivore's heaven. This place, very very good steaks and beans and some red wine. And from there, my plan was to boondock at a Walmart, which was just 10 miles away at this town called Horizon. And I went there, I parked, you know, I deployed everything like to stay the night, you know. I pulled up my tables and unfastened my chair. And then I started seeing a lot of youngsters. It was a busy Walmart, and it was a Friday night, and a bunch of youngsters, you know, with skateboards. And then at some point, I hear some noise outside, these kids screaming, and then one of the kids, it must have been a teenager, started jumping up and down on my rear fender, and my rear bumper on the Minitini, and I just opened the door, and I'm like, what the... you're doing, you know, get out of here. And then they all fled, you know, they all ran away like, ha, like this was a big joke. But I wasn't joking. I was kind of nervous, actually, if something else would happen that night. You know, I didn't feel safe. I mean, I didn't feel unsafe. I just didn't feel comfortable staying at that Walmart. So this was probably 8:30 p.m. at this point. I made me some Cuban coffee and I said, I'm getting the heck out of here. And I did some research. I knew there was a couple of rest areas along the way on I-40 going east. And if all failed, there was a Pilot truck stop in Van Horn, about 90 miles to the east. So I said, you know, let's put some miles behind us and continue. And this was actually a very positive thing. I wasn't able to stop at any of the rest areas because... even though there's a bunch of rest areas in Texas, they're kind of small, all of them. They're not like these rest areas in other parts of the country that are huge. You know, it's usually just a pull out on the side of the road, and there's room for maybe 10 trucks. And they were all at that time full of trucks, you know, getting their rest. So I went all the way to Van Horn, crossed into Central time zone. I was all this time in Mountain time zone. I crossed into Central time zone, and I stayed in the front parking lot of this Pilot truck stop that had like an area in the front for like buses. And I just parked there. Nobody bothered me throughout the night, but I put my alarm clock for 6 a.m., which was still nighttime. But I said, I'm going to get out of here early because my idea was on the next day to go to San Antonio, which was like the last main city that I wanted to visit, but you know, I wasn't gonna spend a whole lot of time. I just wanted to see the Alamo, you know, and the Riverwalk, which are like the two main tourist attractions there. So I left early at 6:30 a.m. I had already drank my Cuban coffee and I hit the road. And then at some point, halfway, I had some breakfast. Anyways, I arrived in San Antonio at around, 4 p.m. I arrived at the RV park and I just unhitched. It was also a KOA, by the way. And I'll tell you why I usually choose these KOAs. But I just unhitched. And went straight to the Alamo. I parked in this parking lot. It was like $15 in downtown, but it's fine. You know, it's downtown. The parking is usually expensive. So I went to the Alamo. I wasn't incredibly overwhelmed. I mean, you know, it kind of looks small because it is in the middle of downtown. They don't let you take pictures or video inside the actual church, but then you can roam the grounds, and they have a large gift shop, and it was a nice landmark to visit. Then I went to this bar, and actually let me look up the name so I can tell you what the name of the bar is. Okay, it's called the Buckhorn Saloon and Museum, and my idea was to have dinner there actually, but it turns out that at this time of the day they only had like bar bites, like two or three things, like nothing. So I had a beer and this bar bites, and to be honest, I got a little tipsy. I wasn't that was not the plan, but anyways, this is like one of the I think it's the oldest bar in San Antonio. And you know, Pancho Villa used to hang out there and all that. And by the way, San Antonio, I really liked the city, and this is a place where I would love to visit more extensively in the future, because it has like this old city character. You know, some cities have a character that you look at them and you say, yeah, this is San Antonio. They're unique in their own right. And San Antonio is one of those cities. And then they have this River Walk area, which is very touristy. And coincidentally, they were having some kind of Mardi Gras celebration, because it was the Saturday before Mardi Gras. So they were, they had like, you know, they have these boats that go around their river, and some of them were like floats, you know, imitating the floats of Mardi Gras. And they have a stage with live bands, which ended right before I arrived, but I caught the tail end of it. And there's so many restaurants, and it's a very, very lively area. And but it was so crowded that I decided not to stay and eat. I went back to the trailer and ate at my trailer. But definitely, the Riverwalk is a place that I want to visit the next time I visit San Antonio. In general, is a city that I want to visit and explore a lot more thoroughly than I did this time. Okay, on the next morning, I left relatively early. And of course, Texas is a huge state. And even though here I am already halfway through Texas, it's still almost a whole day to traverse the Lone Star State. And about 4 hours later, I arrived in Houston. And Houston, you think you're arriving in Houston and you leave Houston, but you arrive in Houston, and 10 minutes later, you're still in Houston. And half an hour later, you still haven't reached downtown Houston. Houston is a huge city. It's incredible. It's like, I don't know how many miles it is, but it felt like I was driving through Houston for like an hour. Then after Houston, 2 hours later, you finally enter Louisiana. And I was already kind of tired, and I was going to actually stay at the same place where I stayed on my way west, which is this Walmart just east of Lafayette. I think it's called Bro Bridge, the town. So, but I decided to just, you know, take a break for about an hour, you know, have dinner, have another coffee, and continue going all the way to Biloxi, Mississippi. Yeah. I didn't make it all the way to Biloxi, Mississippi. And it was, you know, it started raining. It was not a pleasant night to be on the road. So I made it to the Mississippi Welcome Center. And there were all these signs of no overnight parking, but I saw a bunch of trucks parked there. And they didn't look like they had any intention of leaving. So I'm going to play it dumb. I'm going to park here and see what happens. And I prepare, actually, that's when I prepare dinner. Now that I remember. And I ate, and I said, well, maybe I should continue going. And as I was about to leave, the security guard comes and he just tells me, hey, listen, don't stay in this area, because I'm pretty much saving this area for the trucks. But there's another area which is for RVs and trailers and stuff like that, and you can stay there overnight. And I was like, hey, yeah. So I parked, and it was almost like a pull-through site in an RV park. So I just pulled through and spent the night there and slept like a baby. And in the morning I prepared me some breakfast, and actually I didn't prepare breakfast. I just had my coffee and continued. And I decided to explore a little bit of the Mississippi Gulf Coast. And, you know, I drove all the way from Gulfport all the way to Biloxi. And in Biloxi, there were signs all over the place saying no overnight parking from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. But in Gulfport, I didn't see any signs. So I don't know. Maybe next time I think I don't see why not. You could not boondock in one of those parking lots, waterfront, ocean. No, it's not oceanfront because it's not the ocean, it's the Gulf. But it's a pretty nice beach. And yeah, next time I might try that. I don't know if there's some city ordinance that you cannot overnight park and they just don't put signs. But I didn't see any signs forbidding that. Okay, from there, after I wasted like 2 hours, you know, driving next to the ocean, and I drove all the way to Biloxi. And they have the big casinos in Biloxi. And then I just took I-10 back, I-10 all the way east. And then, you drive through Mississippi and then you drive through Alabama. And it's like 1 hour each state, you arrive in Florida. And you will, Florida Welcome Center. I decided to stop and, you know, stay like half an hour, take a break. And then I put directions to home and I'm still 700 miles away. So I arrived in my home state of Florida, but I'm still 700 miles away from home. I don't tell anybody, but I found a water faucet and I, you know, took some water, filled up my tank and continued. I continued for most of the day into the night, and I stayed at this rest area, which is just west of Jacksonville, about an hour west of Jacksonville, in the Osceola National Forest. And I just stayed there overnight, next to all the idling engines of the you know, semi trucks. And I've found a kind of annoying, that noise from the trucks, but now I'm starting to find it like soothing, and I sleep very well when I'm listening to the idling diesel engines. Okay, from there, I just left really, really early in the morning, still nighttime, because I wanted to try to avoid Jacksonville's rush hour, you know, the morning rush hour traffic. And for the most part, I did encounter a little bit of a slowdown. And then I went straight south on I-95, and I stopped several times, and I found a dump station by Vero Beach. There's this, which actually there's also a bunch of truck stops that have dump stations too. But I decided to pay $10 at this. It's a Thousand Trails property, an Encore property, and it was a very clean dump station, so it was worth it. This RV resort in Vero Beach, and dumped my tanks. I was like, what, maybe 3.5 hours away from home. So I decided to stop at there is a Flying J in Fort Pierce. And, you know, I had lunch there at the Denny's and filled up my tank for the last time. And then nonstop all the way to Miami. And you can tell when you're in Miami, when the traffic becomes chaotic. And it's exactly at the county line when you arrive at Miami-Dade County, all of a sudden it's chaos. It's like whoever was in the right lane wants to go to the left lane, but whoever was in the left lane wants to go to the right lane, and everybody is either speeding or going too slow, and it's a lot of fun. Anyways, now you are caught up on my travels, and I never intended for this episode of the podcast to be over an hour long, but since I didn't give you an episode last week, I thought maybe I would get you caught up on everything that I've done. It's been an action-packed month, you know, I gotta say I need a vacation from my vacation, but really, I don't, because in a way it was a vacation, because I was away from home, but I did a lot of filming for my travel videos, and I hope you enjoy everything I have in store for you. I have at least 2 to 3 months worth of YouTube videos that I'm going to give you. Anyway, next week we return back to regularly scheduled programming. If there was ever a regularly scheduled programming. But before we go, I wanna read you some of the emails that I have received. I have one from Heather Hordini. Hey Robert, my husband and I really enjoy your YouTube adventures. We've learned so much about many areas, but specifically interested in Florida. Buying our first RV this spring if things go as planned. Has anyone told you about the show on Netflix, Jane the Virgin? The guy that does the voiceover work sounds so much like you. Sending you blessings and wishing you safe travels, Heather. Thank you so much, Heather. And no, I have never actually watched Jane the Virgin. I've heard of it, but I've never watched it. So some people say I sound like Antonio Banderas. Some people have even compared me to with the Ricardo Montalban. I don't know. I just I appreciate all your comments always. And Pam writes, "Hi Robert, my husband and I discovered your videos as we were looking on YouTube for videos showing how the Florida Keys were doing after Irma. After watching a number of your videos, we find ourselves humming your theme song. As a little surprise for my husband, I bought your latest CD with the idea of playing as we drove on our vacation through the Keys. Guess what? The rental car didn't have a CD player. We are not very techy, but Tim had downloaded your CD into our iPod just before we left on our trip. We played around and figured out how to play it in the car on our way back up the Keys. Thanks for making your travel videos. We'll keep watching. You and your wife make a cute couple. Oh, thank you so much, Pam. And yeah, some of the newer cars don't have CDs. My old Kia actually, until recently, even had a cassette tape. I replaced that stereo like less than a year ago, actually. And one last email from Jeff. Hi, Robert. I just missed you. We were at the Coahuila, up against the lake, and you pulled out early this morning. Yeah, that was when I had my flat tire, by the way. I know you took over the Living the RV Dream podcast from John and Kathy. John and I used to email back and forth on various technical things. I sent him a few mics, headset, etc. over the years. I haven't heard from him since Kathy got sick. And I'm curious if you've talked to either of them and know how they're doing. Thanks, Jeff Steig, Jeff at KMEX, as they called me. Well, Jeff, the last time I emailed back and forth with John was right before the Tampa RV show, and unfortunately he told me that they were not attending, but I don't have any more news than that. So I hope they're doing well. I hope Kathy is doing better health wise, and I would love to see them at some point in the near future. Hopefully they start living the dream again. I know they were thinking of buying a Class C or something, you know, a smaller RV just for shorter trips. Well, anyways, this is all I have for you today. It's been a different episode of the podcast for sure, because I wanted to get you up to date on, you know, everything that I did in the past couple of weeks and why I didn't actually record an episode, because I decided, you know, I was tired half of the time because it was such an action-packed trip. But anyways, don't forget, if you want to get in touch with me, robert@travelingrobert.com, or you can send me a voicemail by clicking on travelingrobert.com on the send voicemail link, and you can record it and I'll play it here on the podcast. And also I want to thank all my new Patreons. I'm at patreon.com/travelingrobert. I have a bunch of new people there, and it's a growing community, and it is great that you guys choose to support the work that I do here on the YouTube channel. Next week, back to as I said, back to regularly scheduled programming. I'll give you a podcast a little more structured, since I am here in my Sticks and Bricks home in Miami, which, by the way, feels huge. I have this a four-bedroom house in Miami, which at the time when I bought it, it seemed like the right size. But I have accumulated so much stuff that I need to start downsizing. Because eventually, we want to do this RVing thing full-time. Anyways, until next week, thank you so much for listening. And yeah, keep on living the RV dream and loving the RV lifestyle. Free in my RV. See you on the road.